We're talking about self-development in this hour and a half, and you have a pretty extensive handout that you can refer to after we're through. You can take sort of one of three approaches to these workshops. Either you can just give them straight lecture and just dish out material and just shovel it out, back up the truck and unload, or you can go to another extreme and make it really a workshop where people are searching passages of Scripture and going back into their own experience and interacting and that sort of thing. I've tried to hit somewhere in the middle. I probably lean a little bit toward giving you a lot of material in the handout and in the presentation that you can get some time set aside and chew over. So that's the way it's been laid out for this time. Later in the session, we will have some buzz groups. We will have a chunk of time where we want you to just stop and think through the things that we've discussed up to that point. So that's where we are headed, and that's the philosophy of the way this workshop has been laid out. To begin with, some of the reasons for self-development, and we've given you all kinds of biblical passages here, that we have a God of excellence. We have a God who does all things well. Verse 31 down there, and God saw all that He had made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. And when God accomplishes something, it is done well, it is done thoroughly. And I think the more we get into the Scriptures and see the comprehensiveness of the teaching of Scripture, the more we appreciate the thoroughness with which He has laid out the plan for our salvation and the plan for our becoming more Christ-like and our involvement in reaching the world. And we see more of His wisdom as we go. And then we see that He is of an excellent character as well as excellent in the things He has created. 1 Timothy 6:16, who alone possesses immortality and dwells in unapproachable light, whom no man has seen or can see, to Him be honor and eternal dominion. And then, excellent is the man God, and so as He came into the world as Jesus Christ is excellent, excellence. Mark 1:11, and a voice came out of the heavens, Thou art my beloved Son, in Thee I'm well pleased. And in His lifetime He accomplished all that He had set out to do and did it with a high level of excellence. And then some passages that we are called to emulate the excellence of God. Item B there, Ephesians 4:1. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, entreat you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called. So to walk worthy of our calling. And so we ourselves are called to excellence as His followers. And then item 3, toward the bottom of the page, we are instructed to invest all of our God-given capacities. And the Matthew 25 passage is on the financial wealth that was given to each of these and how they handled the talents that were given them. And often that is used as an illustration of that which God has given to us we need to handle wisely in our own stewardship. Okay, I'm just racing through some of the material at the beginning, and you can get some time set aside and look up passages of Scripture, but just to give us a little biblical basis for why we would, in our lifetime, move in the direction of excellence in various areas of our walk with God and our life and its other dimensions. Then some practical reasons, not that the biblical reasons are not practical, but I guess we're thinking here more pragmatic reasons for having a lifetime of development set out ahead of us. Number one, it saves time and avoids crisis preparation. Somebody got me going at one time on a little file cabinet thing. Just one of those little files, you know, small one, and to put some topics on it. And so I thought, well, it looks like a little Mickey Mouse deal, but I'll play their silly game. And so I was living here at the Glen. So I started that little rascal, and I'd read something in Time magazine. I'd rip it out and throw it in there. You know, 5 years later, I had a gold mine. I moved down to work at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I was really busy. I was still single in those days, had 5 guys living with me, meeting with a lot of individuals, meeting with couples. You know, you single people, you can meet with couples if you keep it on stuff you know. So we'd watch Get Smart on TV And then we'd get into Word, you know. Bob and Betty Lovern, one of those couples, if you know them, some of you. And we'd watch Get Smart, and then we'd get in the Scriptures. And so, you know, you can do those things. But there were a bunch of officer wives having Bible studies, and there are four or five of those women who are sort of the leaders. So I got the phone call, will you come and train us in how to lead small groups? Well, I did not have any time, but I was forced to say yes. Oh, of course. What time is it? Well, I pulled out my file on Bible study. I opened that thing up. I spent less than 10 minutes leafing through it. Notes I'd taken in various workshops, seminars, studies I'd done. I moved to the front of that file folder the things that I thought I would use. I closed it up. A day later, I got in the car. I spent 5 minutes just sitting in the car looking through what I was going to do, and I went in and put on a 4.5-hour presentation on how to lead small groups. I am convinced that that little help I got back in those days on a little bit of self-development, a little bit of personal management, really paid dividends. And so item one there, a practical reason, is just the time and avoiding the crisis preparation type of things. And so any kind of reading and study in various areas, if we can get back to that material, it's going to save us time down the road. Now, I don't know how your house is organized or your office. In my office right now, I have a piling system, not a filing system. But I am moving in the direction of getting a hold of that, and I am projecting that it'll take about 3 more months, and I'll be on top of that thing. And I don't mean just barely on top, I mean really on top. And so I feel some of that effort is putting me in a position to be in better shape down the road. And that's the idea behind this personal development, self-development, that we want to be in better shape down the road than we are today. So there's a practical reason. Item number two, if we did not develop ourselves, development may not occur. Now, who is going to take care of you and me besides you and me? The answer to that is nobody. For all seek their own, not the things of Jesus Christ. But all tend to seek their own. People have their own ministries. People have their own problems. People have their own needs. And it is the rare person who is in such good condition themselves that they are able then to reach out and help someone else. That is rare among Christians. Have you seen that? And so you and I need to figure out before God what we are going to do and what we need and go get it. And you're in a rare position if somebody is bringing it to you and saying, listen, I want to help you. Listen, I see you may have a need in this and I would like to help you. I would like to report it differently, but that's the way I see it. And maybe my experience is just limited, but I think that if it's going to happen, you and I are going to have to do it. There's some navigators in past history. I've been around, you know, just shortly after the flood, I came here to Glen Eyrie. And I've seen a lot of navigators trained, a lot of them come out of business or profession in the navigators. Others leave the navigators and go into business and professions. And the thing that often surprises me is how somebody that doesn't look like they're going to be effective at all as a person or for the cause of Christ, because they're into this personal development, a few years later, they are really dangerous people. I mean, they're terrific. And I would put my money on the plodder who has a long-term plan for personal development than the person with a lot of innate capacity. Because I've seen a lot of people with high capacity, great brilliance, high academic grades, end up not amounting to much for the cause of Christ. So you and I need to go for it and see what we need and take that responsibility on ourselves before the Lord. Item three, it helps us to speak with greater authority. Titus 2:15, these things speak and exhort, reprove with all authority. Let no one disregard you. Just to have the material we need to do the job will open up the door to do an in-depth job in the life of a person. How often are you with somebody and you had planned to cover certain material with them? You know, it might be a brand new Christian or somebody you're training. And a whole other thing comes up, and I mean, it's critical. I meet one-on-one with two men. I travel a lot, and that's my limit. And so a few days ago, I was meeting with one of those men, and boy, I had it all laid out where I was going with him. I prayed a lot about what to do with him. I have a man-to-man notebook, and I have a name on the tabs and what I cover each session. So I had it all laid out what I thought he needed. Well, he came in and sat down, and he really needed some help with the will of God. I mean, it was a desperate kind of situation where he had to have some answers now. And to have done some workshops on it, to have done some study on it, and to have it there, and to be able to pull that out and say, I use 6 guidelines from the Scripture on knowing the will of God. Why don't we talk about them? And to have that ready. In other situations, I've gone over to my handy-dandy little file. I said, just a minute. And go in there, reach in, pull out the file, get it out, and talk. So, with great someone who can speak with authority, using the Bible, using principles. And so by moving in that direction in personal development, over a period of years, we acquire a lot of things we can use with people and use them with authority. We will become more interesting people, more able to relate to a greater variety of people. Well, that helps our ministry and it helps our friendships if we can do that. All of us have listened to Howard Hendricks, right? Man, I've got his tapes and I listen to him, and I've been in this room with him, you know, a while back. We were talking right here, there's an aisle down the middle, and I had some questions I wanted to draw out of him. You know one of the big things he's been studying for personal development lately? Birds. Can you believe it? Studying birds. Man, he talked about going out with this guy who was an expert on eagles. And that, you know, spent 2 full days with this guy learning about eagles. Well, why in the world, when, you know, when the Great Commission is before us, we've got to reach the world, we've got to get with it, why study birds? Well, somewhere in the long-range system of things, we've got to allow a little time for the fun stuff, too. Or we become just cold and dry. And we need a little bit of the pizzazz in there that we can pull out from time to time, and use that in our ministry, in our relationship with people. You know a definition that I've often heard of navigator-trained people? And I've asked, you know, what is a navigator like? I've been all over this country. I've talked to all kinds of people. They don't all love navigators. Most of them do. But I said, how would you define a person who's been trained by the navigators? You know, one of the first things I often say? A little bit too serious. A little bit too intense. A little bit too goal-oriented. Well, let's go to school. Let's learn from that, see? And then you find somebody, you know, like Leroy Imes, who said, the main objective in life is to have fun. Well, he preaches on other things too, doesn't he? Yeah, right. And so we want to, over a lifetime, to become a person interested in a lot of things and able to talk about a lot of things. I subscribe to Songwriter Magazine. What in the world are you doing reading that dumb thing? You know, I mean, it's a rock star on the cover almost every time. Yeah, but I think when I retire, I'm going to write some songs. And I'm just having more fun reading that dumb thing. You know, I've been thinking about heavy stuff, you know, and then I get into reading that stuff, you know, and it's just fun, you know. You know, why did Barry Manilow do so well? You know, he just about bombed out. Well, the only reason is he hung in there, and it tells all about Barry Manilow. Well, it doesn't hurt to know something about him in relating to the pagan world. Though that's not the main reason I read it. I want to figure out, you know, how you write those songs. So, you know, in another 10 years when I'm 80, I can write some of that stuff. So our personal development, we ought to end up being more interesting and able to relate to a broader sector of the population. And we don't want to box ourselves in. Then item 5 there, to be a more effective tool in the hand of God. Second Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. I've often meditated on that passage and thought of that as God on occasion will look down at the whole world and look for people that He can use for certain jobs. And if you or I are prepared, we might be surprised what God might plug us into. And so in our personal development, as stewardship before God, we continue to be a more useful tool and a more prepared tool, then God can look down and move us around into an unusual situation and use us there. One of my jobs I had when I was on the Glen, I was here 7.5 years, sort of a retarded trainee, and finally I escaped. They got in debt and had to kick some people out, and I got to leave. But one of the jobs I had while I was here is I drove a Volkswagen bus, and I would go pick up stuff downtown. You know, I'd pick up different things, office supplies, and I'd even pick up some groceries sometimes. And so I went down a certain street downtown here, and I went by this church, and it was a green church, and it didn't have any sign on it. And I went, what in the world is that church? And I was learning in those days a lot about praying without ceasing, you know, just praying all the time about different things. And so one day I went by that green church, and I prayed like mad for that green church. Prayed for the pastor. I prayed for evangelistic results. I prayed for godliness in these people. I prayed for Sunday school teachers. I prayed for money to come in. Anything I could think of, I prayed. Guess what happened? About 2 weeks later, well, about 3 days in a row, I prayed like crazy for that. About 2 weeks after that, the navigators get a phone call. And it's this green church. And it was the pastor from the green church. And so he said, we need some training in discipleship. And so they tried about three other people, and finally those all bombed out, and they asked me if I could take this assignment. Oh, yeah, I'd like to. I didn't know it was a green church. And so I went down there and followed the address, and there I was at the green church. Well, I wonder why God did that. Well, I poured out my heart in prayer over that thing. I think there are a lot of little jobs that God would give you and me that would just be really neat. If we would just be prepared to handle it. And so part of the job down the road is to become equipped in these areas so God can plug us into some of these fun deals. Do you know who the people are that get to travel overseas and all these neat trips for the navigators? Boy, I have lately been really motivated on self-development because it's the people qualified to go teach something. And so I'm working on some things in the area of public speaking and workshops and communication and a lot of this stuff. And I'm going to be dangerous another year or so here to where, you know, I can really do some of that stuff. So to become a more effective tool in the hand of God, and along with it, there'll be some personal benefits. To sharpen the mind. Some of us need more of that than others. But I am surprised at what happens when a person becomes a reader. I'm really surprised. Because they have more things in their memory bank that they can relate current things to. And I've watched that happen. I've watched some real ding-a-lings start reading, and 5 years later, they are really something to talk to. And so that whole dimension, to see our mind sharpened. We led a couple to Christ in Denver. He was working for the telephone company as an installer. Well, I did a little follow-up, and then we got him in the 2-7 series, and he started primarily reading the Bible. And then he started doing scripture memory, and those could both be self-development targets. And then one day he pointed out to me, he said, do you realize in a year and a half I have had 4 promotions with my company? And I said, no, I hadn't realized that. That's amazing. What would you attribute that to? He said, my working in scripture memory and reading the Bible and selecting out of what I read what I felt was most important to me. All of that sharpened my mind. He has since had another 3 or 4 promotions. But I believe it's because of really forced self-development as follow-up was taking place in the man's life and as he was starting to get some training. So the sharpening of the mind. Item 7, it helps others put greater confidence in your leadership. And all of us are in some kind of leadership. We don't have to all be generals, but any Christian's at least going to be a corporal or a sergeant and responsible for leading something. Three things that people want to know. Does he or she walk closely with God? Does he or she love me? Does he or she know where he or she is going? And a lot of that is self-development, is knowing where we're going and the close walk with God and growing in love. I memorized 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 in the Phillips just for my own development. This love of which I speak is slow to lose patience. It looks for a way of being constructive. It is not possessive. Is neither anxious to impress nor does it cherish inflated ideas of its own importance. And right on through. Why did I do that? Because that was a self-development project to increase my capacity to love people. And so those are three key areas if we're going to lead people. And so we need, over the long haul, to shore ourselves up in those areas. Item 8 is faster and more reasonable than learning by trial and error. Boy, if we can read something in a book and find out what somebody did, if we can come to a workshop and find out something that's worked for somebody, it is a bummer to try to figure that whole thing out ourselves. And really only pride is the only thing that will keep us from gleaning from other people. You know, a thing that amuses some of us who've been around the navigators for 110 years is that some of the same old stories come around. And talks you will hear here. And I overheard one this morning. And I said, oh, I know where the ice water at the drugstore illustration came from. But Jack Mayhall listens for those things and collects them. Why? He's humble enough to do it. If we only figure out things ourselves, we're in trouble. And so the self-development projects can get us into a vicarious learning based on a lot of time and effort on the part of somebody else. And then 9 increases one's vision and perspective. And so we are able to see a broader view of the whole thing. And because of that, we don't get caught up in the little details in a lot of our decisions in our ministry. We have a broader perspective. It's been very interesting to me the last few years to be involved with local churches and with pastoral staff people. Because there's a whole dimension to the body of Christ that's become revealed to me. And that is the whole dimension of the hurting, needing, failing people. The whole issue of social action. And as a hard-nosed navigator, hard-nosed Christian, I have tended to screen out people with problems, shove them out of my way so I can get to high-potential people. Well, I think probably in a navigator ministry, we need to do a lot of selection. In any kind of multiplication ministry, whether it's navigator or non-navigator, there needs to be a selection and a weeding out and investing in potential rather than problem people. But a thing the local church is into is meeting the needs of problem people. And they're doing it. They're doing some tremendous things. Well, my whole perspective on where people can plug into the cause of Christ is much broader than it was 5 years ago. And that a person is not throwing their life away doing a counseling ministry and so forth. Then 10, it gives a long view of life and will become preventive help in avoiding midlife crisis and ineffective senior years. I've been doing some reading on midlife crisis. Of course, I haven't approached that age. I won't approach that for a while. With men, somewhere the midlife crisis hits, somewhere between 30 and 55. It has nothing to do with your hormones. It has nothing medical, but it's a time of evaluation as to whether or not your life is counted for anything, and you redefine where you're going to go with the rest of it, and the man who makes it through that trauma may come out with a greater purpose that is able to push him then for the rest of his lifetime. Women have that same type of reevaluation, but it's lesser. But I have been surprised to see some people hardly even ripple when they hit those ages, because they have so many interests and they have so many areas that they've been into. They aren't boxed in, and that really helps. Some of the most effective people I know are over 50 years old. So anyway, during these earlier years, if we can be into some personal development, self-development things, it's going to make it smoother down the road when we've got a little more mileage on us. Okay? Well, I've kind of belabored there each of those. I wanted to be sure we covered those pretty thoroughly. And then here's a poem. I won't read the whole poem, but I first heard this when I was going to the University of Washington in Seattle. And I was going to two different churches. I was going to one Sunday morning, and then I went to another one Sunday night. And one Sunday night, there was a PhD who taught at one of the smaller universities in the area, who is a committed Christian, and he would attend these services. And some subject came up, and this PhD stood up, and he quoted the third paragraph from the bottom in that. "The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." And boy, I grabbed that thing and I wrote that down and I mismemorized it. He didn't quote it quite right. I've since gotten this and I can quote it the old way, which was wrong. It was the idea. But I thought, you know, I am not a brilliant person. I don't have a lot of charisma. The only thing that is going to make me succeed is persistence over a long haul. Now, there was just a cold, hard analysis. I grew up in a small town, a high school where there were 68 of us graduated in the class. They did get one stoplight in there while I was growing up. And so I was really successful in high school, but there's no competition. And I didn't know till I hit the University of Washington that there was some competition out there, that I wasn't as hot a hot shot as I thought I was hot. And so I came to that conclusion. My only possibility for being effective for the cause of Christ will be a long-term, accumulative sort of thing. And so that, along with some passages of Scripture, was something that I often referred to. And you'll have fun reading through that whole poem, which really talks about the person who plods and hangs in there and over a long haul makes their life count. Okay, helps for being a more teachable person. And let me start. I've just passed up 10 overheads. But, you know, I've got engrossed with the stuff, and you'll forgive me for that. Okay, on becoming a more teachable person, really this is at the heart of personal development, self-development, is whether or not we really want to learn, whether or not we really want to develop. And I believe that attitudes, you know, if you look through the Scripture, attitude, that is the key issue. If the attitude is right, you'll get the result. And so I think that is more valuable to us than a lot of methodology. But the willingness to change. The willingness to change is one. Let me just toss up here some verses here, and you can jot those down. I give a message on the willingness to change. I believe that is at the heart of the discipleship issue. Philippians 3:12, "I don't mean to say I am perfect. I haven't learned all I should even yet. But I keep working toward that day when I will finally be all that Christ saved me for and wants me to be." That is change. Exodus 23:30, "By little and little I will drive the enemy out from before you until you be increased and inherit the land. It seems like it's little by little that our life changes and the enemy's control over various elements is removed. Colossians 3:10, you are living a brand new kind of life that is ever learning more and more of what is right and trying to be more and more like Christ who created this new life within you. 2 Corinthians 3:18, but we Christians have no veil over our faces. We can be mirrors that brightly reflect the glory of the Lord. As the Spirit of the Lord works within us, we become more and more like Him and reflect more and more brightly, and so forth. But I see that as a key attitude that must be present in the person who is over a lifetime going to be involved in personal development. If that attitude is not there, the person over a period of time will not really accumulate that much input. Try to get rid of indecision or defensiveness. Not be defensive, but be willing to admit mistakes. Those people that I've known for years who are really used by Christ are people who quickly admit faults. I could name names. And I could also name names of those who are very quick to be defensive, very quick to say, well, I'm not so sure about that. I've got a young man who's going to be my assistant for coordinating the 2-7 series for the United States, which is the job I've got right now. And I was just down in Waco, Texas. They're trying to sell their home. They're a young couple. He's 24. They have a 6-month-old baby. But having been around him now on several occasions, we were driving from Waco down to Austin last weekend where I was going to put on a training clinic. And I said, Mike, let me point out something that will help you. You tend to overlook details. Now remember, we were headed for the bank and you had forgotten the check. Remember that you didn't do such and such. And I named about 4 things where he'd missed details. And I said, now your wife is picking up that deficiency. She's covering for you. But down the road, if that isn't built into your life, there's going to be some resentment between you and your wife. You've got to grow in that area. Boy, did he thank me. And his whole reaction, yeah, I can see that. Now, whenever you see it, will you just come out and say, attention to detail. Will you do that for me? I'm going to enjoy working with that brother. I'm going to enjoy working with that brother. And you know, when he is 34, not 24, he is going to be a giant. But the defensive, insecure people don't learn. The more this is a problem with you, the more you've got to fight it and just make yourself, just volitionally, not be defensive. And then it's going to lick your insecurity. Then item 3, just a basic curiosity about life. The whys and the hows of life. How does this work? A why? It's very interesting that a lot of the business things that you read, it gets into who, what, where, and when. If you read management things, who, what, where, when. Weak on the why and the how. Most biblical input we get is who, what, where, and when. Not a lot of the why and the how. But to become a curious person, well, I'd really like to know about that. That's the thing we can pray about. A lot of these you can just pray about. Item 4 here, to become a patient listener. Let everyone be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. And the patient listener is the one who is able to finally, after, 20 minutes into the conversation is when the pearls start being dropped. But it's the impatient listener. Bop, here we are. Well, what 3 things? Okay, let's cover 3 things. Okay, beep, beep. R2-D2, and there they go. But no time for the people. Boy, a thing that hit me when I haven't traveled much. I'm no traveler, but 1.5 years ago I got to go to 9 countries overseas. You know the thing that impressed me about Nigeria? They live in a culture there where you can't be sure the electricity will work. You can't be sure the water will work. The telephone works on a Tuesday every 3 weeks, once every 3 weeks. And they have all these, but you know what they do? They just walk over to somebody's house, knock on the door, and go in and talk. There's a couple from Great Britain. He's a PhD in physics. And he's working over there in the ministry. And the wife said, you know, we just got back from London. I really feel sorry for those people in London. She said, they feel sorry for us. But we've learned so much from the Nigerians on acceptance and love and not being so Western in such a hurry and so goal-oriented. And so the patient listener not only wins hearts, but picks up a lot of good stuff in process. Then item 5, another attitude there, is having the humility to learn from lesser people. Now, all of us, you know, if the big cheese says it, we write it down. But I talked to a businessman, and he learned something from the janitor of the building. And he said, boy, this guy had an idea. And he said, I sat down and talked to him for about 10 minutes. He was willing to learn from the janitor from the building, for the building. Well, we just need to be listening for information all over the place. Then item 6, develop the mindset and habit of immediately implementing applications. In the last few months, I've listened to Michael Vance. He has 6 tapes on creative thinking. And I've listened to those tapes over and over and over. And one of the things he talks about in there is the use of cork boards. And there's a whole process that he talks about in there that Big Boy Hamburgers are using. Boeing Aircraft is using it in one of their big setups in Kansas. But it's just a big cork board where you put to do, doing, hang-ups, done, and inputs. And instead of using do lists, they just use this cork board. Well, I got this thing going in my office, and it's dynamite, and I corked the insides of the cabinets in my wife's kitchen, so she's going on it. I shared it with this Christian brother. The next time I saw him, he had that whole thing operational. He shared it with his wife. She had it operational. They had organized their prayer on cork boards. And I last time I talked to him, I said, you know, we've just decided we're going to find one room and we're going to cork the whole thing. He said, is to do, and so that's the big list. Doing, we're in process. Hang-ups, there's some kind of a bottleneck, and so until that gets resolved, we can't push on. And then done is the fourth one, and then inputs, that's when you get a phone call or something, just stick it on the board right there. And then on that little card, you put the date in the top left, the date you start, you know, when you put it into the doing list. And then when it's completed, at the top right, you put in the date that it's completed. And these companies are using it to train people who replace a person in a particular job. They just take all those cards, and then they're able to see how long things take. And in corporations at the bottom, they also put what they estimate the budget cost will be. And then item 7 is to rid your life of indecision, but be patient in waiting for God's direction. I see a person can learn to be decisive, and the very fact they are decisive, they push right on past the will of God. So there's got to be the balance. But if you are an indecisive person, you are not going to do well in your total self-development thing, because the whole thing in self-development is deciding things. And so that's a key issue. Then we need to have an impatience. Let's see, is that number 8? To have an impatience about repeated errors. Boy, if that thing happens to us twice, boy, we're impatient about that. We want to straighten that out so it didn't happen again. Then number 9 is don't isolate yourself, become an independent operator. The person who's isolated then doesn't have all the good inputs that'll help them. I grew up in such a small little nothing part of the country, western Montana. And every time I go back there, I feel sorry for people who live there because they're clear out of touch with reality as far as what's going on in the world. It's just, you know, when my wife and I first went up there after we were first married, went into a shoe store and they still had these little tiny pointed high heels, you know. I guess maybe they're back in style now, but they'd been out of style by 15 or 20 years. Well, man, they're selling those like crazy up there. You know, they know the difference. Then number 10 is to seek counsel as you need it. Now on this, I would say don't share your problems with everybody. That's a bummer too. But where it's just a basic attitude that when we need some input, we go for it. But we go to the best source we can. We don't share our dirty laundry with everybody in the world. But we go to one or two people, get the input we need, get the answers we need, and press on. And then item 11 is to develop a keen sense of what things are priority. The people who are floundering with the non-priority things in life never can get the self-development things done. So the more we have a sense of priority, the more we're in a position then for long-term effectiveness. And then item 12, seek principles more than methods. The methods will change. I mean, learn the methods too. But I'd rather learn one good principle than a whole bunch of methods. Man, the first time somebody said, "You know how you do public speaking?" And I thought, there's no way he's going to tell me how to do public speaking. And he said in one sentence, a thing I've been using, I'm using it on you right now. State, illustrate, apply. Those three things. Now there is a basic principle for communication. That's not just methodology. That's a basic principle for communication. State. You just read the verse, then you probably state it again, say, here's what the verse said. Then you illustrate it. And so you bring in an illustration, and then you apply it. State, illustrate, apply. And I'm not doing it on every point here, but I'm doing that all over the place here in this workshop. Well, I'm grateful to have heard that. But you know, if they say, now at certain points you need to be soft, certain points you need to be loud, well, that's kind of gimmickry. But state, illustrate, apply. That's at the heart of communication. And then item 13 is be realistic in evaluating yourself, but don't underestimate what God may wish to do through you. Now see, in personal development, we've got to evaluate where we are. And we've got to be realistic. If we're poor at communication, then we need to know it. If we're poor with relationships with people, we need to know it. If we're not organized, we need to know it. But right on the heels of that, we need to realize that God may choose to do something way beyond what our educational level is or our intelligence. So, anyway. 14, become a person of habit patterns and scheduling. That kind of person is able, over a period of years, to do self-development. 15, just plan to learn forever, for the rest of the life. That's an attitude. We are working a lot with adults in our Navigator ministry. And people lose their capacity to read material that they had when they were in school. And it doesn't take long. I mean, in 5 years, they've just about lost their academic capacity. It's amazing. Well, they figured when they graduated with the BA degree or the BS degree or even a master's degree, they're through. But that's the beginning. Why is it called a commencement exercise? Boy, I agree, yeah. Boy, it's just the beginning. Okay? And then item 16 is look for lessons in both positive and negative examples. I was sitting on the parking lot of the supermarket, and I saw this mother and her child walking down the sidewalk, and the child was crying and falling. "Don't leave me, mother. Don't leave me. Don't leave me." And the mother said, "If you aren't good, I'm going to leave you." Well, boy, I've since read stuff on raising children. That's one of the worst things. Well, I didn't even know the principle, but boy, I vowed in my heart I will never, ever do that kind of rejection to a child. I'll use some other method, but not the threat of abandonment. Well, there was a negative example, but I went to school on that. You know, may I confide in you with something? I would say 90% of the things I have learned over the years has been through negative example, not positive example. I hate to say that. Where are all these pace setters? Where are all these trainers of men? But I'm telling you like it is. And so if we aren't looking for a lesson, see, we can see the problem and resent it. Why resentment? Why not just learn from it? Why bitter and resentful, angry? You know, why not just learn from it? And then item 17 here is to look for what God is trying to do in your life. And that may be different than our lesson plan. You know, the thing that I just haven't been able to figure out through the years is, why do I keep getting help in my strongest area? As a brand new Christian, I think the strongest area in my life was patience. You know, if you were to take a virtue, I think it was. It's just the way I was brought up. I was a patient person. Why did God just back up the truck and dump all kinds of other things on me to make me more patient? You know, I wasn't planning on that. I thought that God would strengthen me in some, but I discovered I wasn't as patient as I thought I was. But look for what God's trying to do. It might be a little different from our self-development plan that we laid out. And then item 18 is put more effort into developing your strength and remedying your weaknesses. If you haven't read The Effective Executive by Drucker, it's a secular book, but he deals with that whole issue very thoroughly. There's a bibliography in the back of your material. But in Japan, for example, it's almost an impossibility of firing an employee. Once you've got them in your company, you've got them in your company. And so what do? Instead of firing them, they train them in their area of strength. If they failed in an area, they find out where they are strong and develop them in that area. And then turn them loose and let them do their thing. And I think so much of our self-development, our approach is, why don't I take care of my weaknesses? Instead of focusing in on things in which we are strong and becoming really good at that. And then 19, here to think of the 20s as years of preparation, the 30s as further preparation and effective ministry, the 40s and 50s as your most productive years. Take care of yourself so you're still going strong at 60. I know a couple of men who just turned 60 that are in the ministry. One is a navigator, one is a pastor. Boy, they are still going strong. Their best years may still lie ahead. But I know, you know, man, when you hit 30, you're done. I mean, you know, it's the whole collegiate concept is, you know, you hit 30, you know, that's... And more people call me sir now. It's starting to bother me a little bit. But just that perspective helps on self-development. Because I've seen very intense people, very goal-centered people, becoming frustrated because they haven't got their whole act together at age 25. And they may not get it together till they're 35. And they need to know that. It gives you a little freedom. You say, well, I don't have to do it all right now. And then item 20, to maintain a lifetime goal to be strong in the Scriptures. 2 Timothy 3:17 in the Phillips says, for the Scriptures are the comprehensive equipment of the man of God, and fit him fully for all branches of his work. See, there's no better qualification for ministry in the world than becoming strong in the Scriptures. And so that is a worthwhile attitude to have, that's where the focus is going to be. Okay. Okay. Then we've got some specific techniques, and we'll just kind of zoom here. Take notes, review notes. Pretty clear. To learn to ask questions. The key thing there is you don't ask a question that can be answered yes or no. You know, you leave it more open-ended than that. And then item 3 is to keep your energy level up through proper exercise, nutrition, rest, medical, dental care. I'm running into a lot of people in their 30s that are kind of worn out. I can't believe it. I swim for exercise. I injured my back 7.5 years ago, so I swim laps. But I can tell you in what kind of condition I am physically by how many hours sleep I need. And I've tested through the years. 7.5 is the least that I can get along with. One of my good friends, he only needs 5. Covet. You know? But I need 7.5. when I'm at my best. Now, when I'm really down the slob position, 10 hours of sleep. And I've been in that kind of condition along the way where I required that much rest because I'm in such bad condition in the way I was eating. But see, I don't know who said it. I should have asked my wife. She's my computer. She knows all this stuff. And she's still, we've been married 13 years, and she still quotes stuff that I've never heard. You know, something out of Shakespeare or something she read in a book. But anyway, some old boy said that the essence of genius is energy. Now you stop and think that one over. It's the person who isn't tired at 5 o'clock. It's the person who is able to use the whole evening. And the person who's kind of dragging by 4 in the afternoon, that person does not have enough energy to press on and read some other stuff. My friend, who only needs 5 hours of sleep, I talked to him and said, I was up at 4 this morning. I read such and such a book. How much did you? Oh, I read all the book. I mean, before breakfast, he had read a book. Oh, man. So anyway, that's a high priority. You see that? The physical, taking care of ourselves physically is a key priority issue. Item number 4 is to schedule time for evaluation, thinking, and planning. You know, the weakest thing among Christians, I think, related to ministry, is they don't get time to think. They get time to do their Bible study. They get time to pray. They get time to quote the verses. But they don't get time to think. And I've got a file folder, just ideas. I've got more ideas than I've got time and money. I just love to take off on some of those things. Man, I just, oh boy. But to think a thing through, I really enjoyed preparing this workshop. I've never done this before. I think they probably figured I needed this, so they made me do this. But I've had a ball putting this together. This has been such a blessing. I probably put in about 10 hours, I guess, preparation on it. And a few years before that. But time to think through a thing. Now, how does this thing work? Or why does this work? You know, to think that one through. You know, there might be a better way to do evangelism. You know, right behind my desk, I've got a prominent place there. It's a profile of Edison. And the statement is, there's a way to do it better. You know, find it. There's a way to do it better. Find it. Do you think all the things have been figured out yet for evangelistic ministry in the United States? Do you think all the things have been developed for follow-up of believers? Do you think everything's been figured out on how to manage time? Do you think everything's been figured out on how to relate more effectively to people and win their hearts? I don't think so. And boy, a person who has the biblical content in their mind and then they think and pray, they're going to come up with stuff that's going to work. Then number 5, to keep placing yourself in a position where you're teaching and leading others. Who gets the most out of a Sunday school class? The Sunday school teacher. Who's going to get the most out of this workshop? I am. So whenever you can put yourself in the position where you have to lead or teach, you're going to benefit. Oh, I think of some of the agony, though, along the way trying to do workshops. I remember coming into Tucson, Arizona, and I was a young navigator and traveling through there. They lined up a conference. They said, you're going to be one of the speakers. Oh, well, I didn't have any prepared messages. I mean, no young Christian has prepared messages. I mean to preach. I mean, and so Bob Foster was the main speaker, and boy, he's eloquent. He is just, oh man. So I went in and gave that thing my best shot. And I talked on scripture memory. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun, just as a part of that talk, to have them memorize all the books of the Old Testament? Just a little memory exercise. Well, what I didn't realize, and I now realize, is that most people who sit out there don't want to work. They want you to work. And so I took about 20 minutes of that thing and we tried to memorize the whole Old Testament books. Well, in the next talk, Bob Foster, he had a pretty good laugh over my deal. He wasn't unkind, but boy, that hurt. But I had to take a shot at it. And I remember the first talk I gave that really went right, and it was right in this room. And man, and I survived that thing. I didn't mess it up, and people actually got something out of it. You know, but man, we've got to put ourselves in a position where we teach or lead. And we're not going to do it perfect right from the beginning. But it's the person willing to take the chance who's going to, down the road, be able to do it. Okay, then item six is keep a lessons learned list. I have through the years. I'm not keeping one right at the moment, but I've gone years at a time doing it. And to share lessons learned with other people, I'm doing that currently. To have somebody else, well, what have you been learning in the last week or two? And then talk about it. Boy, it's great to have that kind of relationship. Item seven is to read books. Mark them up. Read books. You know, one of the big concerns that educators have today, and I'm rubbing shoulders with educators more because 2.7 is a curriculum thing. I didn't know what it was when I wrote it. But it's a curriculum thing. And you know, one of the big concerns is primary method of education of people today is television. And they are getting the wrong inputs. And Christians are watching enough to where it's giving us wrong inputs. We've got to be reading books. I'm not diminishing the Word, see. But self-development is getting beyond our time in the Word and Scripture memory, getting on out there and read stuff that expands us. And then item eight here is to listen to one cassette tape 3 to 6 consecutive times before moving on to another tape. That's a key issue. I do it all the time. Right now I'm listening to the Book of John. And I just listen to the Book of John over and over and over and over and over and over. The tape before that was Alex McKenzie on how to save 2 hours a day. And just over and over and over. But, boy, if you don't have a cassette in your car, you better budget some money and get it in there if you drive at all. And then item nine is work on only a few things at a time and learn your lessons well. Divide a whole into its parts and work on each of the parts. We can't work on everything. But just get it down to a few things, hit those. Then number 10, always maintain an agreement with at least one other person that you will observe and correct each other for mutual benefit. Boy, that's a winner. It's not always that delightful in process, but I've got two guys right now who I have that relationship with. To be around people who will challenge and stimulate you. The insecure person will tend to be around people that don't make them feel insecure. They're doing the worst thing they could do. They are the ones who need the self-development more. And so to be with people who are head and shoulders above us all the time. I took a corporate finance course when I was studying Jewish engineering at the University of Washington. That's business administration. And I wasn't going into banking, and I wasn't going into, you know, where you know, they put this stuff into stocks and all that. But, man, the first day I was in that class, I said, boy, this is going to be terrific. Why? Because of the quality of the instructor. He dressed, he had a three-piece suit on. He came in there, you know, with the $8 haircut. That was a lot in those days. And, you know, clean shaven, and he had his lesson down, and he used good vocabulary. And one day he put his foot up, you know, on the little stool right in front there. And he said, men and women, do you want to be sharp? He said, if you want to be sharp, associate with sharp people. Then you'll be sharp. And man, I knew he knew what he's talking about. He was the sharpest thing I'd seen in that whole school, you know. Boy, he was with it. And so often, the insecure person will stay away from the people who can pull them up. And then item 12 there is to get personal time with effective people and learn from them in their areas of strength. Just get with them, talk. You know, one-on-one, often the thing you don't know how to do is when you get with some big shot and you want to get one-on-one and have them say something, you know, what do you ask? You know, a thing that'll help you is just say, tell me what you think would help me most where I am. And then they can go through all that stuff that they know and have experienced, and then they can lay it out to you. But don't feel like you have to come up with all the right questions to ask those people. And then items 13 and 14, some annual goals, some longer year goals, like 5-year goals, 7-year goals. And I've put in your material on, on pages 9 and 10, just a 7.5 to 8-year plan for doing Bible study. I haven't loaded you down with a lot of the methodology stuff. I've felt that I should focus more on philosophy, and you can figure out a lot of the nitty-gritty. But I've set annual goals for years, and usually it's in the areas of personal, family, job, and ministry. And then under personal, it's the spiritual part, and then it's the rest. And self-development usually focuses in the rest, though we need to also have some self-development things we're shooting at spiritually. And then item 15, to pray for wisdom and discernment. Isn't that interesting? Of all the things that Solomon could have asked, the only thing he asked for was wisdom. My dad said to me one day, he said, Ron, he said, I pray for you 3 or 4 times a day. I led my father to Christ. He was 53 years old. Led my father to Christ. I was the first Christian in all my family. I didn't know one other Christian. Later found out my great-grandmother had come from Norway, who lived to almost be 103, who in her last years was confined to her room, who read her Bible, prayed, and sang hymns most of the day. You know, and she probably prayed for me. I see some of those 5-generation pictures. But Dad said, I pray for you 3 or 4 times a day. And he said, the best I can figure out to pray for you is for wisdom. He told me this after he'd been praying for, 4 or 5 years. And I thought, maybe that's why I'm able to figure some of these things out that I've been able to figure out. Is that he prayed for wisdom for me many times a day. And I believe that wisdom is a key issue. And we've got something on wisdom a little later in here. And then 16, to become highly proficient in a few areas. And then dabble in a whole bunch of other ones. But realize at what level of competency you're going to go and just become highly skilled in a few areas. And then item 17 is evaluate how you might do something better or different the next time. Just a little thing that'll help down the road to not repeat the same errors. To set aside money so you can attend seminars. Item 19, to visualize and walk through the sequence of how something's going to be done. Now there's a key one. I want to just say a little more on that. Is if you're put responsible to handle a workshop or to give a devotional or to lead a Bible study or to do evangelism, to take some time where you're praying and thinking there and actually visualize going to the dorm, how you're going to approach that thing, walk through it in sequence. And for self-development, the person who gets into that pattern, they are going to learn how to do things quicker because they're not just cranking out some methodology. They're sequencing. They're seeing how that develops and they're seeing it in perspective and just that perspective is going to really help. Then the last item there is to look for opportunities to make your unique contributions. There are some things that you can do better than other people, or there's nobody around who can do it better than you can. And so you do it. And so you make your unique contribution. You know, a unique contribution I've been making for years that I really kind of despise is that I play one of those machines over there, that organ. And growing up, my mother and father were professional dance band musicians. My dad also had an agency for Cadillac, Oldsmobile, and Case Machinery. My mother was a fantastic pianist. And so from my earliest remembrances are jam sessions with musicians. And so I learned chord progressions and all that stuff. You know, one summer, my mother said, what do you want to do this summer? You want a job? And then my stepfather, he said, what do you think? A job? So we worked out a deal. Either I'd practice 5 hours a day on the piano and organ, or I'd take this job at the grocery store. And said, you choose. So I said, I'll practice 5 hours a day. And so all that summer, that was my job. I practiced 5 hours a day. Usually broke that 5 to 6 hours a day. Well, I'm still coasting on that. You know, it's what I learned then. But a unique contribution. I'm rusty, man. The rust just falls off my hands, you know. But sometimes that's a unique contribution that I can make that nobody else sitting around seems to be able to do any better. So I just swallow my pride and go do it. But there are things that you can do that's a unique contribution here and there. Well, plug in and do it. Okay, I've said more than I know on those subjects, so we should move on. Why don't you just stand up a minute, and I'll go about 10 more minutes on the material, and then we'll do some interaction things. Clinic in Kansas City, Missouri, a year ago. Well, I flew in, and the blizzard hit, and the airport was closed until 2 days later when I needed to leave. They opened it up, so it worked out fine. But there was a man who sat in on that training clinic on how to use the 2-7 series. His name is Dr. Avery Willis. He is one of the leading writers for Southern Baptist material. He was the president of a seminary in Indonesia and then took this responsibility. And so he sat through the training clinic. And so we finished the clinic up, and we had a couple hours at the airport before we would go out. And he mentioned a thing called Bloom's Taxonomy. And I said, what was that thing you're talking about? And how many of you have education background? You've heard of Bloom's Taxonomy. It is so interesting. I thought I'd toss it in here because on self-development, for our own development and for the training of other people, and it's on page 8 there in your material. The implications of this are just staggering. It's a secular tool. Bloom is the man who wrote it. Taxonomy means the order of things or the sequencing of things. So this is the sequencing in a growing degree of difficulty in educating a person to reach these higher levels. The lowest level down here is the knowledge level, and we know that we've accomplished that in our teaching of ourselves or other people when we can list and define. That is just raw knowledge. So with my daughter, who's 10 years old, we were talking one day, and I said, well, let me just tell you how you remember how many books are in the Bible. There are 39 in the Old Testament, and 3 times 9 is 27. There are 27 in the New. Well, now that's raw knowledge. That's the knowledge level. And so now she knows how many books of the Bible there are in the Old and New Testament, and she has a way of remembering. Now, the next level up is that of comprehension. Now, we know that's taking place if a person can put it in their own words. So we're doing a Bible study, and a verse is read. And so we say to someone, would you just tell us what that verse says? And if they can say it in their own words, they are at the comprehension level. Most of Christian education is the first two levels. Our whole Sunday school system, our preaching from the pulpit, most of it is at those lower levels. The next level up is the application level. It's particularly easy to identify in skills, like can the person give their testimony? Are they prepared? Can they give it? Can they present the bridge illustration? So we have that level. Then the analysis level is taking something apart and dissecting and figuring out. In evangelism, an example would be that you or I are out doing evangelism. We've presented the gospel. We've presented our testimony. We have to decide whether to press for the decision now or wait a week or two. That takes analysis. We're not functioning clear at the bottom of the scale down here, just raw knowledge. But we have to make a decision, and it's on our shoulders, and we have to make it based on what we know. But you dissect that out. You say, let's see, what has been their response? How much have we covered? Are they tired? When will I get another shot at them? And so you figure that out and you make that decision. That's at the analysis level. The synthesis level is where we take a lot of little bits and pieces of information and put that all together in something kind of new. So in evangelism, we would, in our advanced study group, we would say, okay, let's put in 10 to 12 hours of work and let's come up with a new way of presenting the gospel, some diagram. It could be the door illustration, or it could be, the boat illustration, or it could be, but we'll have to figure out some other way of presenting the gospel, And so we'll use the little bits and pieces we know about evangelism, scripture, and all of this to come up with a new thing that we can do. The evaluation level is clear up at the top of the scale, and this is where you have to figure everything out. It's like we went to Kenya in East Africa and went in there and said, now how will we do evangelism here? And you just have to figure the whole thing out. Now why do I bring in Bloom's taxonomy? Because in self-development, we need to decide to only come up to the comprehension level on a lot of the things we do. We would be foolish to just put in hours and hours and hours and hours in some personal development project. We just need to be up at the comprehension level of something. Now, there'll be other things that we need to just become highly, highly skilled in, be operating up in the synthesis evaluation levels. It's where we get enough background and input and practice and experience to where we can adapt these things a lot of different ways and handle them different ways. So in life, we need to choose how high on the scale we're going to go with a particular area. Now see, I'm reading that Songwriters magazine, but I'm only functioning on the bottom three application at the highest. But if I ever get really serious, man, I'll really give it some time and go after it. But that's just a fun thing I do right now. So, in your training of people, realize that you have to bring them through this process. They have to get the knowledge first, and then comprehension, and then application. And those of you who have been involved in helping people with their personal testimony, you see, in preparing a testimony, you're operating primarily at the application level. But for you to critique a testimony, you're operating at the evaluation level. So to critique a testimony, you have to be way, way, way above the people whom you are critiquing. So that just gives you a scale with which to work on your own personal development. This diagram, I don't need to say much about it, except self is in the middle, and we need to... We have God word and people word, and we love people with a sacrificial love, but first priority is God, and the second priority is people. So we're aware of that, and I really don't need to say anything about that. On the verses on wisdom, I just want to touch on that. You just have some definitions there. But it's interesting that the person who is not wise is called a mocker or a scorner, like in Proverbs chapter 9, for example. And that's an emotion involving both anger and disgust. It's to treat with contempt or ridicule or deride, to jeer, to scoff. It's an attitude which really holds the information away. But I would just like to point out in the Proverbs 1 passage, I won't belabor it, but God has really dealt with me out of Proverbs chapter 1. In that the terminology is, wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public square. You see the same idea in the first part of Proverbs chapter 8. In that wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights along the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. So we have wisdom and its personification. It's a form of a woman. The wisdom is a woman. And wisdom is crying out to the people. Now here's the way the Spirit of God has dealt with me on these passages. And I don't need to belabor it. It's real simple. Where is wisdom offered in these passages? It's in the streets. Now what's the application of that? It isn't in this room, in a workshop, that we will gain most of our wisdom. It will be in the marketplace. When I ran these copies, Bob Wilbraham came by and he said, he gave me an original. He had a few more he wanted to run. I put it on the machine. He said, will you cover the holes that had been punched? And so I put the thing underneath, you know, and it made a line. He said, no, you put it on top. Oh, okay. Put it on top and ran it, and it didn't even show the holes. Well, man, I didn't know that. I didn't learn that in a classroom. I just learned it down there running these dumb copies, see? But now I know that. But I've sat in airports. I've sat on parking lots at supermarkets. I've been in stores. There is all kinds of stuff to be learned. And the person who is so preoccupied with self that they're not free to think outside miss most of that. And so you can study the passages, but the thing that impressed me about wisdom is it is all over the place. And if we keep our eyes open for a year or two, we've gleaned tons of stuff that we can use. Okay, then pages 9 and 10, that's just a long-range Bible study plan. And page 11 is all that I have left to cover with you. But let me just touch on that. If you're no longer single, now that's looking at it, either you are single now, but someday you're not going to be, or it's that you are married now. But the big question is the use of singleness. I've quizzed a lot of people along the way. There is a tremendous opportunity for the single person to do self-development. I wondered why God didn't give me a wife sooner. You know, man, I'd pray and I'd claim verses and I kept my eyes open too. But Dr. Oswald Sanders spoke right in this room one night. And he made the statement, I was sitting right over there, and he was right here. And he said, when I knew who I was supposed to marry, it was 6 years before God gave me that wife. But in those 6 years, God built the foundation for every bit of ministry I've had in my lifetime, including my speaking to you tonight. And earlier this year, when he spoke at the International Leadership Conference here, I reminded him of that. And he said, oh yes, I waited 6 years. And I lived on that for several years along with some passages. But you know what I was impressed with? I've got to make the time count. Single, I've got to learn everything I can. I've got to become equipped. And so I was averaging 3 hours a day in the Word. For a six-month period, I memorized a verse a day. And I had them ice cold. I'm still floating on some of the projects that I did as a single man. And the singles who are all uptight because they're still single and worrying so much about who they're going to get, chances are if you get with it and get your act together, God could give you something pretty sharp, you know. Because if you're that together, God's going to have to give you somebody to keep up with you. So I think that's a big one. Then the achiever, item B. When the achiever hits marriage, the achiever starts to neglect people, whether that's a man or a woman. The high-performance person will tend to neglect people and pursue their objectives. And so in the whole self-development process, we need to realize that people are more important than all our projects and all of where we're going and all of this. And so if you are the achiever type, God may put you through some circumstances that are going to really put the squeeze to you. And you know why children are given to parents? To train them. And the parents weren't given to children to train the children. Oh, that's all wrong. The children train the parents. I mean, that's enough on that one. Item C is the place of the secular job. Probably 90% of you sitting here are going to have a secular job. Well, then you get all bent out of shape. Boy, it's not God's best. I got a secular job. You better do some self-development in your secular job and really become good at it. And there are people all over this country who are really good in their secular job. But like Jack's message this morning, whatever you do, make disciples. And there are business and professional people all across this country that in the process of doing that job are discipling people. But self-development carries over into the secular job. And you may need to go back and get that master's degree. You may need to go back and get that PhD. You may need to be an apprentice in such and such an operation to get into that and down the road be able to do your job. But it bothers me when Christians who are called to a secular job do not do self-development in the area of their secular job. than learning things not predicted in your written goals. You've got to keep looking for that thing that God is trying to do. Now, for 4 years, I traveled doing fundraising for the Navigators. I traveled all over all 48 contiguous. That's the word. I've been practicing that word and I blew it. But all 48 contiguous states. Well, that is a miserable job. One of our guys, Bob Stevens, was asked, how long do you think a man can stand that job? He said, I think the maximum he can stand emotionally and spiritually is a 2-month block of time. That's just maximum. I was sent on an assignment that was a 5-month assignment and survived it. Yeah, almost. And then the guys I was traveling with, they get engaged to some girl, so I pull him off the road. And then God wasn't supplying me a wife. What in the world is going on? 4 years I did that. There was no apparent reason. I couldn't figure it out. It wasn't until we were 2 years into Denver and writing the 2-7 series that I realized that no other navigator in the world had talked to as many pastors or had talked to as many lay people in churches trying to do discipleship. Oh, I nearly cried, and I'm not an emotional person. But I couldn't believe it. God knew what training I needed to do my job. But He couldn't show me that. I couldn't see that. You know, I didn't see any sheep come down from heaven saying, 2-7. You know what? You know? We didn't know what was going on. So, anyway. Okay, anyway, what I'd like to do to wrap this session up, and I'd like us just to go 5 minutes over. I'd like you to take 5 minutes alone. Go back through the things we've rapidly gone through, and I'd like you to mark some things that are the main things that you can take from here, the main things that you can use. Look for a half a dozen, something like that. As soon as you've done that, I want you in groups of three. And I want you just to share with the group one thing that you feel is the key thing you're going to take out of this workshop. Okay? So you're on your own for 5 minutes, and I'll give you the clue, the cue, when it's time for you to break in groups of three.